Hello and welcome to Ukraine Calling, your weekly review of what's been happening in Ukraine with a focus on a main issue. I'm Bohdan Nahailo for Hromadske Radio in Kyiv, and here's a look at some of the stories that were in the news this week.
Thank you very much. It's a great honor to be with President Poroshenko of Ukraine, a place that we've all been very much involved in, and you've been seeing it, and everybody's been reading about it.
I'm absolutely confident that Ukraine is a story of success.
My talks today with President Poroshenko are another proof of what I have heard from all my interlocutors in the recent weeks.
The meeting of President Poroshenko and President Trump took place. On Tuesday, the 20th of June, President Petro Poroshenko paid a visit to the White House and made a drop-in call on U.S. President Trump. The meeting had not been announced far in advance, which was unusual for such a high-level visit. President Trump later said he had, quote, very, very good discussions, unquote, with the Ukrainian president. And President Poroshenko came away pleased from the meeting, saying that, quote, we received strong support from the U.S. side, support in terms of sovereignty, territorial integrity, and the independence of our state, unquote. Trump reassured Poroshenko that the U.S. will not cancel sanctions against Russia. In fact, a few hours before President Trump made a joint appearance with the Ukrainian president before the media, there had been an announcement of new U.S. sanctions. These sanctions target Russian, Donbas, and Crimean companies and individuals for the ongoing occupation of Crimea and continued Russian presence in the Donbas. President Poroshenko also had fruitful meetings with U.S. Defense Secretary Jim Mattis and Vice President Mike Pence. At a press briefing, Poroshenko said that arising out of the meetings just held, quote, very important agreements will be signed, including agreements on defense cooperation, including an agreement on defense procurement, and an agreement on military technical cooperation, unquote. Ukrainian media were quick to point out the symbolic significance of President Poroshenko succeeding in shaking the U.S. president's hand ahead of Russian President Putin, who is most likely to do so at the soonest at the G20 meeting, which is some 2 weeks away. Russian media analysts, on the other hand, portrayed the drop-in meeting as a diplomatic snub, and Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov called the imposing of new sanctions regrettable. And in Brussels, not only did President Poroshenko succeed in paying a working visit where he met the EU President Donald Tusk and discussed ongoing support for Ukraine from the West and the continuation of sanctions against Russia until the full implementation of the Minsk Agreement, but also met with other EU officials. On Thursday, these EU sanctions were extended for yet another 6 months. And in Parliament, at least two important pieces of legislation were passed during this week that deserve mention. One was concerning the Supreme Court, laying the basis for the establishment of a revamped version of this institution. And secondly, more recently, fundamental legislation dealing with animal rights, the protection of animals, and outlawing and criminalizing cruelty to animals, a landmark piece of legislation in that sphere for Ukraine. And as far as the war is concerned, there has been something of an intensification of the conflict in the Donbas. Attacks by the Russian-supported forces on the SMM, that is the OSCE monitoring mission, were noted, and there has been a general increase of attacks on civilian targets. According to OSCE statistics, 45 civilians have been killed in the conflict or the war since the beginning of the year. But this week, along the front lines, two Ukrainian military were killed in action and 21 wounded. This week, the OSCE spokesman described how OSCE observers of the special monitoring mission were threatened and attacked at Yasnovata, which is in the DNR-controlled part of Donetsk. Two armed men threatened two groups of OSCE observers who were in vehicles at the time. They tried to break windows of the vehicles, pointed weapons at the observers, and started shooting in the direction of the observers when they began to leave. Well, my guest this week is Lee Rini, a Canadian journalist based in Ukraine, but who has covered Eastern Europe. He's worked in Budapest and in Warsaw as well. He's probably best known as the editor of Lviv Today, a wonderful monthly that comes out in that city and provides us with very rich and colorful information about what's happening in the city, in the cultural sense, in terms of the life of the city, everything that a tourist and I would imagine an inhabitant of the city would like or would need to know. We'll talk more about that later. But Lee is also interesting because he represents that group of people who have moved to Ukraine in recent years and have tried to establish themselves here. And so he can tell us a little bit about what it's like to try to work in Ukraine, not having had a head start, a rich father, or a well-connected link in the government, but to come and make it on his own or their own. So welcome, Lee.
Thank you very much.
So let's begin by just asking you, where are you from?
I'm from Saskatoon, Saskatchewan in Canada. That's in Western Canada.
And what brings you to this fair country of Ukraine?
I came out here the first time a very long time ago. It was 2001. I came on an exchange program called Canada World Youth. I spent 3 months in a small community in Western Ukraine in the Rivne Oblast, a place called Ostroh. And I just sort of fell in love with it, and my connections to Ukraine started then, and I've been coming back ever since.
Ostrog's a small place, but it has a famous intellectual academic center, the Ostrogska Akademia, yes?
Yes, it's the oldest university, they will say it's the oldest university in Ukraine. It was the first established in Ukraine, but it was gone for a long time. After independence, they reestablished it. And yes, that's where I worked on two different programs.
So why Ukraine?
Well, after I came out here the first time, I just sort of fell in love with the people primarily and the culture. And, you know, where I live in Canada, there's a significant diaspora, Ukrainian diaspora community. And so even when I went home, I didn't really leave. There was a lot of people that were interested in what I did here. And there was a lot of opportunities between the two places. So I kept coming back. I had friends here. I had friends there. And it came to the point where whenever I had enough money to go for a vacation, it was, you know, Cuba or the Bahamas or Ukraine. And I would always come back here because I would just have more fun and enjoy the people more.
And you have no origins that are Ukrainian?
No, none. I would argue that now I do.
Then you didn't?
No, I came out here at 21 the first time, and no, nothing. The only thing I knew about Ukraine were the Easter eggs and you know, pierogies and borscht. And they're vareniki, but in Canada we call them pierogies.
Yeah, and the Ukrainian festivals in Canada, of course.
Well, the Ukrainian dancing, yeah. It's very popular where I'm from. But, I mean, those are very basic parts of a culture, so...
So when you arrived, did you encounter any significant cultural differences?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, when I came out here the first time, what I told my friends back home was that it's a great place to go to in a foreign place first, in the sense that it's very different, but in some ways it's the same. So it's still Europe here, and it was even in 2001. But it's a very different type of Europe than you'll get in a Paris or a London or a Berlin. When I came out here the first time, I really noticed differences in personalities, differences in how people reacted to different things. When I lived out here for 6 months on a program in 2005, and in the family I was living with, we had a son, a very good man, but he was an alcoholic. And one of the things that I noticed differently was how the community treated this man compared to how he would be treated as an alcoholic back home. So, for example, in the community, people regarded him as a nice man who has a problem. And where I come from in Canada, it doesn't matter if he's nice because he chose to have the problem. And so it was a really unique, it's just one of the examples of the different ways that Ukrainian culture, Ukrainian people approach things that are very different from the way that we do back home.
And how did you cope with the language barrier?
Well, you know, the language is difficult, especially in a small community like Ostrog. There's 9,000 people there, 13,000 people when the university is running. Before I moved out here, I did pick up the alphabet, so I was able to read, but I was incredibly shy. When I first moved out, I could only say a few sentences. The fortunate thing I had when I came out here before then is that there was no internet. There was one place to use it in the community. It was always busy. And so you actually had time in the evening to study. So I brought a book with me. You didn't understand the television. It was difficult to speak with the host family members because they didn't speak English. And so I worked at it. I went through the book. I came up with lists of opposites, and then I would have my friends translate the words. And that was a very useful way in the sense that if I couldn't remember one word, I could remember the other. I remember, for example, when I was first learning, I remember the word pamyatate, which is to remember, but I couldn't remember the word for to forget. I know it now, but at the time...
And did the locals regard you as somewhat strange? You weren't rich. You were in a provincial area. What were you doing there? What were you looking for? Did they not find it strange that instead of trying to go to Kyiv or Lviv or Odessa, that you ended up there?
Well, I'll be honest, they still think that I'm a little bit odd. And I think most expats feel that when you're in Ukraine, one of the first questions they ask when they find out where you're from is, why Ukraine? And to be honest, as an expat out here, when I meet another expat, it's one of the first questions I ask them as well. So I think it's a great question. Sure, in the small town, you know, it was a little bit different because there was a program that saw a number of Canadians go out there. It was very early in the program. What set me apart is that I made a large effort to learn the language, and that set me apart from many of the other Canadians that were there. And I did end up learning the language fairly well. And so I was able to communicate and get into different experiences than many of the other Canadians. For example, I was able to go out. I had a friend who was drafted to the military, and his family invited me to go with him for the signing ceremony. And so you do a tour of the base, and it was an incredible experience that not many foreigners got at that time.
Well, moving forward, since then, since those humble beginnings here, you've managed to become the editor of Lviv Today. You've taken part in OSCE monitoring of elections here. You're well known in Kyiv in the journalistic circles. How did you make that transition from what I described as humble origins?
You know, you just talk to people. It's hard to really say. When I moved out here, I knew that I wanted to write. I moved out here to write a book. And so I was looking for English language media to get some experience. And that's how I came across Lviv Today, which I knew about even before I moved out here. And I was fortunate enough to get I started writing with them very early on after I moved here. And then 2 or 3 months later, I became the editor. And that has provided me with a number of experiences to meet different people. I can tell you that one of the major factors in where I am right now is my understanding of the language and understanding of the culture, which are, I think are very, especially when you come to Kyiv. You know, I lived in Ostrog. I lived in just outside of Lviv for a number of years, and it's a different experience. It's a more rural experience. It's, you hang around with a lot of locals, and so you get a different opinion. You understand what they think about the news of the day. When you're in Kyiv, it's very easy to hang around with other expats who have a different view.
Yeah, it's very cosmopolitan, I suppose, yeah. So tell us about Lviv. So you end up editing a fantastic publication, more on that in a second, but the city itself, obviously it wasn't quite up to where it's at now. It was perhaps getting there or starting to get there. And this was, I presume, before the Euro football championships, which really was a catalyst in the development of the city. What were your first impressions of Lviv?
Well, Lviv is one of the favorite cities I've ever traveled to. I would actually argue that the UNESCO heritage of the downtown was when the city actually started seeing significant improvements.
And when was that? roughly?
Oh, that was in the early 2000s, 2004, maybe.
So that had an impact.
Yeah, surely. And if I was to show you my pictures from the first time I was there in 2001 until, you know, right after 2012 or even this summer, you can see how even Ploște Râneac, the main square in Lviv, has improved. The facades of the buildings are improved. The streets are there. You know, Lviv is a very interesting city. It's when my friends come out here, I tell them it's unique in the sense that when you go to a place like Paris or London, people want to see the Eiffel Tower. They want to see, you know, Big Ben or these places. Lviv has Ploște Râneac and you know, the Svoboda Prospect.
Ploște Râneac, that's the main city square.
The main city square.
Centered or built around the city hall.
Right. And the city hall is also very nice. You can climb up to the top. But Lviv is more of a city where you need to experience. You need to go to the different restaurants. You need to people watch. You need to stop on the street and play chess with somebody. You need to go to one of the many festivals that they have every weekend. You need to go to an art show. And every time I go there, there's a new restaurant, there's a new club, there's something, there's a new festival. Every time I go back,
and the tourists keep pouring in.
They do, and not just from Western Europe, but from across Ukraine, and before the conflict, also from Russia. It's a very unique city.
Well, this is what you notice. I would say even if not 50%, maybe even more, 60% of Russian-speaking tourists. You have a lot of Poles, of course. Mm-hmm. You have a lot of Germans, I notice, Austrians, Jewish people from various countries. Many Russian speakers, especially from Eastern Ukraine, who are discovering a different kind of Ukraine, a city which symbolizes Europe for them.
Sure, you bet. And I don't think that's even sort of a new phenomenon. I would say that was partly the case during the Soviet Union. I've seen old tourist books of Lviv from the 70s where they have pictures, and they're all in Russian and, you know, Soviet symbols all over the place. And even at that time, Russians came out to Lviv for a taste of Europe. So I wouldn't say it's just a new phenomenon, but certainly I think the city has capitalized on that marketing.
Okay, well, a few weeks ago, I had the pleasure of speaking to the publisher of Lviv Today, Peter Dickinson. But we didn't get into the nitty-gritty. Tell us a little bit about the philosophy behind the journal, what its aim is, and who is it aimed at?
Well, Lviv Today is it's a very unique journal in Ukraine. It's primarily focused on Lviv and Western Ukraine, and it is, until recently, the only English-language resource available in the area. It is not solely English language. It is bilingual with Ukrainian. And that also sets it apart from most of the other English language publications in Ukraine. So in Lviv, the reason that we do it bilingual is because it's not just for tourists, but it's for Ukrainians that want to understand the Western viewpoint, to understand what Westerners like to read. And one of the comments that we get, because we have native English speakers write articles and we have native Ukrainian speakers write articles, and they're translated. And so you'll have one article that about the same topic, about the same event, with very different ways of saying things in Ukrainian and in English. So we get comments from teachers from Canada, from Britain, from Australia, that they like to use our magazine as a teaching resource because of the differences between the language. It's not just directly Google translated. It's not even the same sentence by sentence thing. The same information will be there, but said in a native way in Ukrainian and a native way in English.
And what kind of balance are you trying to find in terms of the content, in terms of the themes that you cover?
Well, we talk about lifestyle in Western Ukraine. Certainly Lviv has an impression of itself, I think, and Leopolitans have an impression of themselves that we certainly highlight. I think that people in Lviv would argue that they feel that they need to represent the most Ukrainian ideals of Ukrainian culture. And we highlight that in the magazine. There are just an incredible amount of events that happen in Lviv every year, every weekend. And so we highlight all of those events. Typically stay away from politics, more or less. It's somewhat difficult to do in this country, in this environment. But we focus on how to live life in Western Ukraine, what to discover. We talk about places to see, certain cultural things to look out for. What happened in the last month? What did you miss? What's happening in the next month? Where should you take your family to? And it's a monthly magazine, which I think has led to our success, because it's a difficult market here in Ukraine, but we have a very big name in Lviv. We advertise at the football games for Karpaty. We advertise at Miss Lviv, at Lviv Fashion Week, almost any.
The jazz festival, I assume.
Obviously, which is happening this weekend.
The book fair, yeah. Yeah, I noticed that you've got coverage of that, and soon to be the first Mozart festival, connecting Mozart up, because his son ended up living in Lviv, yes?
Yes.
If I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, and there's...
Did Mozart himself visit Lviv?
My understanding is that he did not, but I stand to be corrected on that. I don't believe that he did. I believe that there is a bust of his son in Lviv that you can actually search for, which is, high points if you get out and find that. But surely there's a huge cultural life in Lviv, and that's centered at the opera, at the Opera Theater on Svoboda. And there's events. There was a very interesting festival that just ended, I think, last month or 2 months ago, and it's a ballet choreography festival. It's the second year that they've done it, and it's just incredible. It's young choreographers from across Ukraine that compete in new ballets. And you go and you watch the final event at the Opera Theater, and you know there's just so much talent in this country, especially in you know activities like ballet, and to see it all put in one place, you know, it's people in Lviv have a very fortunate experience.
Okay, time is running out. It's a wonderful publication, as I've said before. Colorful, well produced, great photos, great stories, well written. Just name two or three of your favorite pieces or ones that you may have written yourselves. Which stories gave you a lot of satisfaction?
Oh, well, I've done a number. I cover sports quite a bit, and so I've had the opportunity to cover, for example, Ukraine in France last year when they were at the Euros.
Yeah, we met in Lyon.
In Lyon, we went to the game
and
there.
As a Canadian, you're a great hockey enthusiast.
And we just had the World Hockey Championships.
So tell us quickly, Ukraine, how does it rate in the scheme of things?
They're a strong team that needs a couple of foreign players. They need somebody that can score. They were competing against five other teams here. They ended up finishing sixth, and so they're going down a division. But they were competing against teams that had five or six Canadians on them, and they didn't have one. And if they had one person that could just had a natural ability to score, I think they would do better. I'm going to be a little bit critical of the coaching as well. I think that the power play was one of the worst I've ever seen, but we can talk about sports another time, I think.
Just briefly on another about another hat or cap that you've worn or wear from time to time, election monitoring. That must have been quite an eye-opening experience, seeing the political process at work here.
I highly recommend it for anybody that's interested, that has a background in politics. I've had the opportunity to see five different elections here, from before the revolution to during the revolution to after the revolution across Ukraine. I've been from Lviv region to Kyiv region to Dnipro region to Mykolaiv region. And I've seen some very interesting things. It's helped me learn a lot about democracy back home. It's helped me learn a lot about the problems that Ukrainians face when they go up against the bureaucracy here. And it's been an eye-opening experience that I highly recommend to anybody that has that type of interest.
Okay, and telegraphically, because we have to finish, and I ask this of most of my guests, are we moving forward? Do you see progress? You've been here all of these years. Are you one of these people that sees the glass as half empty or as half full or something that can be refilled at any stage? Or what's your take in a few words?
Well, I can tell you that people in Western Ukraine are a little bit disappointed. They see where Poland has moved since independence in the last 25 years, and they think that they should be in more or less the same place. Certainly, I've seen this country grow. I think since the end of the revolution, what you've seen is a formation of a singular Ukrainian identity, and that is foundational. It allows them to get past the politics of language, which that was the first 25 years of Ukrainian politics. And so right now you see, you know, new investors coming in, you see startups, Ukrainian startups that are being bought out in the States. So yeah, it's an exciting time to be here. It's at the forefront of new type of warfare. You know, you talk about hybrid wars or cyber warfare. All of that stuff is happening right here, right now. And to see, you know, Ukraine get visa-free access, that for my Ukrainian friends here, and I've been here 15, 16 years, that is a watershed moment in this country that I don't know if Europe fully understands how much that means to the people of Ukraine. There's still things that need to be done. I mean, nobody's gone to prison for what happened during the Maidan, and that. But I think that they're working towards that. There's institutions, the ombudsman. I think that things are going in the right direction.
Okay, Lee, thank you very much. That was very interesting to hear from Lee Reaney, a Canadian journalist who's been here quite a long time, came and has worked his way up from starting in a local community, learning the ways and language of this country, and now is an editor of Lviv Today, is often on election monitoring missions, reports on business issues in Kyiv, and is a well-known figure in the expat community too. So we thank you very much, Lee, for joining us. Moving on to culture. Ukrainian performance won a bronze medal at the Cannes Lions International Festival this week. The winning piece was initiated by the Ukraine Crisis Media Center with composer Svitoslav Lunyov and author Gennady Kurochka to commemorate the 75th anniversary of the tragedy at Babyn Yar, and is called The Witness. The witness in question is the wind, which saw these terrible events unfold. The emotional piece is performed as part of a moving installation by children who sing and play instruments. Their motif is, quote, "Be the voice of those who cannot speak for themselves," unquote. And here's a song for you. It's called "Oi u lisi, lisi," which means "in the forest," a folk song performed by a new female vocal group, Yahude. Enjoy. Looking forward, next week I will be hosting the show and bringing you an overview of the news in Ukraine, international issues, and a feature interview. Tune in for a new episode of Ukraine Calling. We'd love to hear from you as well. Write to us at ukrainecalling@hromadskeradio.org, and you can find that on our site and read the transcripts of our programs there. I'm Bohdan Nahailo for Hromadske Radio in Kyiv. Thanks so much for listening.